for Thursday, March 15th will come to order. We'll Senator Chamberlain is here. We'll begin with Senate File 2058. Senator Chamberlain.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. This, I guarantee, will be easy.
Oh, thank you.
Before we start, maybe...
Be careful about making those claims. There's a, have a way in this place of turning the easy into the complex and difficult. So
should have been here last night at 9 o'clock.
You're prophetic, however.
And thank you, Madam Chair. There is one amendment, written amendment, I believe. I don't know what number it is.
This is the first hearing, so this would be an author's amendment.
Yes, Madam
Chair.
We'll
get it out.
I will also have an additional oral amendment for a couple of areas.
We are we're shy of a quorum at this point, so we won't take action until we get a quorum. But you can explain it, and we'll be ready to go.
I have to look at the written amendment again, but as far as the oral amendment, Madam Chair and members, talking with MDE, and we do have agreement on this, talking with MDE, they Section 1, Sub 1, the bill, the original idea, staff had thought that dates were such that no longer applied. 2005-2006 on line 1.23. We didn't believe that there were any students left, so that could be that section was originally deleted for that reason.
So, Senator Chamberlain, yes. Are you talking about the bill now rather than the amendment?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Let me back up then. We've got the A1, and this is just an author's amendment, as I had said. I don't know if you want to wait till we have an official quorum or...
Well, before we act on it, but...
All right.
I don't know if you want to...
Okay, I'll start with this.
Include any explanation of it in context with the whole bill.
I'll start with this then, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment, again, MDE and some others have had approached us and said that this was still appropriate in the... and it was necessary... and ongoing. So let me flip to that for a moment, please. Perhaps I could have someone from MDE or Lori Grivna come up and explain
Madam
this
Chair.
Piece of it.
You know, we've got, there's something wrong here that in terms of the reference. Huh? Pardon?
Madam Chair, I might be able to illuminate this a little bit. In the original bill, there was a repealer, which you see on line 1.3, that struck the entire APIB section, subdivision 1. And paragraph B is still critical for the driving the appropriation. So what we're doing is bringing in the section and then just lining out those provisions of the section, basically paragraph A, that is, in fact, not operative any longer, but retaining paragraph B and then deleting the repealer of that subdivision.
Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair. It threw me off for a minute there, too, but yes, that's correct. Thank you very much, Mr. Norman.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's the basis of the A1 amendment. The oral amendments that would go along with this is that, again, talking with MDE, start on page 1. Subdivision section 1, subdivision 1. You'll see the language at the bottom there was deleted. The original intent was that because of the dates, those children were no longer in the system. Well, MDE approached us and said there are still some kids that this would impact, or some young adults this would impact. So I think they said about 200 or some. So we wanted to put that language back in. So the oral amendment in this case would be to just delete section 1, subdivision 1, those changes. The second part of this would be on page 4, line
Senator Reeder?
I'm sorry.
Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, I want to thank you for reinstating that deleted language there. And actually, we had a discussion on that yesterday, and I think we're doing the right thing. So I appreciate
that. Thank you, Senator. Thank you. So, Madam Chair, line 4.18, MDE again approached us, and there was some discussion that you see they have a repeal of 122A.68. Let's strike that repealer. We want to keep that in. There is still some need for the framework for the residency program. Apparently, the Minneapolis and some other schools have used it, so we don't want to take that away. So, in other words, the change there would be, I suppose, after the word nine on after letter nine on 4.18, we just strike and 122A.68 are
delete the semicolon and
right
and the. And 122A.68.
Madam Chair, I think it might be advisable on 4.17 to insert and following the semicolon just prior to 122A.18.
Okay.
Insert and. Okay.
We have a quorum.
Oh, yeah.
I think we do have a quorum. So let us adopt the A1 amendments, and then we'll take the oral amendments as they come.
Right.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Then.
The oral amendments so far, or do you want to finish the?
Yeah, I just have one more, Madam Chair.
Okay.
So the last part of that is, as you see in line 4.32, there's language that has been struck there, and it refers to 122A.68. That's the language, that's the statute we just put back in and didn't repeal.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine we want to put that back in. So we leave that
delete section in. 2 and Article 2.
Yeah, we could delete the whole section. That'd be fine. So
okay, so the amendment, the oral amendment, on page 1, delete section 1, because that means that the current language in the statute will stand.
Yes.
And on page 4, 4.17, after the last semicolon, insert and on 4.18, after subdivision 9, delete the semicolon and the word and 122A.68.
Yes.
And then in Article 2, we will delete section 2 beginning at 4.26. So those are the three items of the oral amendment. Is there any discussion on that amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Is there anything
Chair?
More? Senator Tomasoni.
If I missed this already, tell me that Senator Chamberlain already explained it, but what are we repealing?
Senator Chamberlain.
Right there, right now, Senator Thomas.
Okay. All right, okay.
Okay. So
I thought we were going to vote.
A quick run through the repealers. School board, back here. There. On page 1R, 128.28. It's already part of the board policies, so it's not needed. It's redundant. The next one, 120B.019.
What is the subject of that?
Subject of?
Of the 128.28.
Madam Chair, I have the provision. I may want to punt and let Ms. Butler deal with more of this now that she's returned, but it's a school board or duties section, duty of each school board through its clerk or authorized agent or employee to report the name of children required to attend school with excuses, if any, granted to the district, et cetera, et cetera. And I think what the testimony was is it's already part of the school board policy and that there was some feeling that this could be repealed.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, members, yes. Next one is 120B.019, profile and learning. It's no longer around. Okay. We could get rid of that. And next item, I have listed number four, 120B.13, advanced placement. We've already, discussed that. That's part of the amendment, so that's in.
Yep. That is
part of the author's amendment. And 120B.31. Again, that no longer exists. MD thought it was some good framework, but it no longer exists and it's not currently funded. So, but MDE thought it created a framework that might be necessary. But
a framework of
the accountability and statistical accounting of some reporting, but that's not funded and it's really not used. Maybe staff, Marcus, or Mr. Now,
Ms. Butler,
elaborate
do
further.
Do you want to, or
not sure.
Mr. Rundica? People are clear with. Shouldn't be twisting those things around like that. No, I know you don't. Don't panic.
Madam Chair and members, Subdivision 3 was the creation of the Office of Educational Accountability, which is no longer funded. So that's why deleted.
Thank you.
Repeal.
A60, Subdivisions 3 and 4. While you're at it, Ms. Butler, if I miss you.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Staff was doing a good job. The next one, 120A.60. That one kind of goes with the. Again, this is. They believed it was ambiguous and optional language with the maze in there. Wasn't a mandatory issue. May establish mediation board. School boards, schools could do that on their own. This is not a mandatory, so
okay.
Thought I could remove it. Same with sub 2 under that. 121A.63. Again, you have a permissive statute with may in there, and it was something that the schools and the district could establish now, perhaps, an ombudsman. That's why that was struck. 122A.18.
Subdivision 9.
Yes. Those are done. The dates are well passed. He is okay with that. And the last one, we have restored 122A.68. That has been restored in total. That is it, Madam Chair, members.
Okay. Are there any other questions or further discussion? Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the Office of Education Accountability, while it's not being funded, is that a reason to eliminate the reference in statute? Maybe there would be a future opportunity. And I'm wondering just, if you feel strongly that it should be deleted at this point.
Senator Chamberlain.
Senator Olson, Madam Chair, and Senator Wieger, to use a phrase, will I die on the hill for that? Not necessarily. It's doing no harm. Some people have argued it provides a framework for something to go forward. So obviously, the other side was if it's not being used, not funded, you know, we can free up some, you know, space in the code books. But I'll defer to the committee on this if you'd like.
Well, Madam Chair, I would prefer that we not delete that reference. I think there's still opportunity, and I wouldn't write it off as a dinosaur.
Well, Senator Wiegert, I'm trying to, is this a special office in the department that we've never done? Or I remember we did set up some things at the university, kind of a cooperation. What, I haven't got the statute in front of me as to what this Office of Accountability, it was a part of our assessment program and initially developing it in, and I'm not sure, was it back at the Profile of Learning days, or was it, where did we?
I'm sure, I believe it was subsequent to that, but I'm
right following
testing my memory on that.
My memory has been tested and failed.
I think, weren't you the author of it?
Not that one, no. Maybe Kelly, I don't know. Madam Chair, maybe the department.
As our counsel has said, if we ever wanted to do it, we can simply put the language back in and fund it, because it's kind of non-existent. So I don't know that, I don't know if people are reading our statutes regularly to look for opportunities to do things, but I don't think that is the case.
Madam Chair, would it be okay to ask if the department had a position on that?
Is there somebody here from the department?
Of course, Madam Chair. We could not keep them out.
Hiding behind the pillar. Welcome, Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. Senator Chamberlain brought this bill forward, and we did discuss some of these issues. Obviously, the Office of Educational Accountability is not funded. However, the discussion we had was that we felt that this was at least a framework in place, that if the legislature would have had a discussion, that the framework's in place for some oversight and for some accountability, looking at MCAs, also the accountability, the federal accountability system that would be outside of MDE. Obviously, it's not funded. We are in, you know, if there was in better times, we would have some encouragement to fund this. I know that there has been some other encouraging language in the past that has come here, and I'm not suggesting that, but we felt that it is at least language in place if the legislature wanted to move forward. We would rather see it not omitted. That being said, you know, it's not funded. So,
Mr. McHenry, is it is the language dated, or is it appropriate across the ages, shall we say?
Madam Chair?
Because if it would need a revision to do anything, then you might as well either start fresh if you felt there was a need and we were ready to fund something to do this. Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, in the subdivision that's being proposed for repeal, there's reference to its original creation in 1997, so that would have been during the Profile of Learning era.
I thought.
Your memory is better than mine. It says the language goes on to say it's established and shall be funded through the Board of Regents and the University of Minnesota.
It's a framework that may not repeat itself, because I believe since that time we no longer even have the Department of they've changed the departments over at the university. The whole structure of things has changed. To say nothing of leadership. So
okay.
I think it might be if we really felt that need, it would somebody could create appropriate language and structure for what we would be requesting it to do.
Agree.
Okay. Thank you.
That's a good point.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Any further discussion? If not, Senator Chamberlain moves that Senate File 2058 be recommended to pass, and it would be sent to, I believe, sent to the floor on general orders as amended. All in favor? Any further? I should have indicated if there was anybody else that wanted to testify on this. Is this consent calendar material or not? I'm asking members what you think. there's not a whole lot, you know, left in here. Senator Stump.
Madam Chair, I don't see anybody jumping up to save the profiles of learning.
So should we put it on the consent calendar?
Sure.
Okay, we'll recommend it go on the consent calendar. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is adopted. Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. And the next bill is Senate File 577. Senator Thompson, is he here? There he is. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This Senate File number 577 is a bill that has already been presented to the committee. And debated, and it was laid on the table in order to try to get some buy-in from some of the stakeholders that had some concern with
what. Senator Thompson is moving to take the Senate File 577 off the table.
Thank you. That is, yes, so moved.
Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed?
Did you get some buy-in? Before we take it off the table?
Well, I don't know. If he doesn't like the way the things go, he can always ask to put it back there.
Well, maybe if you didn't get any buy-in, we don't need to take it off the table, and you can just not have it even presented.
Well, I don't know if he's having to represent, or if you've got some other things you want to do with it, or what?
Yes, I have. I have a delete all amendment, and some things have changed that we need to discuss.
Okay, the amendment is being handed out, or is it in our packet? I did.
So the motion to take it off the table did prevail.
It did.
All right.
The motion prevailed. If I did.
All right. Members should be receiving the A4 amendment, and let me just briefly talk about what that does. If you look back at the previous A2 amendment, there was a delete all amendment. There was a list of five things. It said local school boards shall develop, on it went, and then there was a list of five things that local school boards shall develop and implement policies to ensure that publicly funded resources, including but not limited to time, materials, equipment, et cetera, be used to communicate and are not used or authorized for use by public employees to. And then there's a list of five things. There was some significant objection to numbers 4 and 5 because the thought was that that would prohibit or could potentially prohibit some activities that all of us acknowledge we would not want prohibited. For example, members, if you were faced with a piece of legislation and wanted to talk with a school board member or a superintendent in a school district or a teacher or principal, there was some concern that numbers 4 and/or 5 in that list on the A2 amendment might prohibit that. And after talking to some people, I tended to agree that that was a bit overly broad. And in fact, the House version of the bill omitted 4 and 5. I did, however, want to get at one concern that people have had, and that is that people are using school time and school property and computers and that sort of thing sometimes to engage in political kinds of activities. So if you look at the A4 amendment, which I intend to offer, but I actually have a question for Ms. Butler before we get to it, what you'll notice is that list of the 1 through 5 list has been trimmed down to a 1 through 3 list. But then the next paragraph, which would be lines 1.12 through 1.16, has been added. So basically, members, the changes that have been made is I've traded 4 and 5 for that paragraph I referenced in a player to be named later. And so hopefully.
Senator Thompson, you're confusing me because 4, you got in the A4 amendment as 3, soliciting funds for political purposes. So that is not allowed. Were you referring to three?
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
I misspoke. In the A2 amendment, it was numbers 3 and 5
Thank
that
you.
Created the problem, not 4 and 5. Thank you.
Thank
so
you.
Now 1 through 3 would be old 1, 2, and 4. You're correct. Thank
okay.
you. And then we have that additional paragraph added. But Ms. Butler, I've got a question. It was raised to me by someone before the hearing started that if you look at line 1.14, the term instructional personnel is used, and the intent of this paragraph is to prevent any school employee from using you know, the internet, et cetera, to influence on any political kind of issue. So is there a standard definition in within the law of education in our state as to what instructional personnel mean? Would that be limited to teachers, or would that include, I'm wondering if we could use a broader term, and I'd look for your direction on that.
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, the instructional personnel is not defined that I'm aware of. But what we might do is delete instructional personnel and use the language that's on 1.8 where it says it's about the policy is about public employees. So put public employees there instead of instructional personnel.
All right. So if I were to do this as an oral amendment or just incorporate it in, then on lines 1.14, we would delete the words instructional personnel and would use the words instead public employees. Is that correct? All right, so I would ask then, Madam Chair, that that change be incorporated into the A4 amendment, and with that I would move the A4 amendment.
Okay. Senator Thompson has moved the A4 amendment with the incorporated change on 1.14 of deleting instructional personnel and inserting public employees. Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, Senator, I see Dr. Peterson sitting right behind you, and he's going to be speaking on behalf of a bill that I have coming up that deals with a concern with regard to how our legislation has affected immersion teachers. Now, he is a public employee, and it's during his day, school day, where he's paid. So I still think that there's a problem with this legislation, and it's critical, by the way, that Dr. Peterson is here to advise us on this issue because he's the one who knows about it. And if it were something that, you know, I recall when I had a bill that talked about smart boards, there were some teachers here that demonstrated the way that we were using smart boards. Again, they were public employees during their instructional day. So I still think that it's too broad and that lines 1.12 through 1.16, or actually not all of it. I think that having a policy and defining it, but the policy at a minimum must prohibit whatever. Oh, that's from using the internet. But if he sent me an email about it, that would be the same. He did send me an email. That's how I knew I had a problem.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, I guess from my perspective, I believe it's reasonable not to use the internet during instructional time to try to deal with these kinds of policy issues. And remember, with respect to this paragraph, let me read it again. It's talking about that the policy must define appropriate use. So this is actually allowing the individual districts to determine what the appropriate use is. And I guess I would trust school board superintendents, et cetera, to be able to define the line between you send a superintendent or an instructor or a principal a question that you want answered on a factual basis and actually getting into a political kind of discussion. Remember, this is directing the local authority to use their discretion as to setting this policy.
Well, Madam Chair and
Senator,
then why do you need to be so you know, at a minimum must prohibit, why can't you just trust them to use their discretion? I think they would be pretty smart about using their discretion. Why don't you just let them define a policy?
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, well, the reason we're here is because that seems to have been a problem, as we've seen with there were several handouts in the in your folders. The first time we debated the bill, there is, I think, a two-sided one handout today. And so, yes, we would like to think that those kinds of things didn't go on, but frankly, the reason we're here and discussing this bill is because of the concern for those things that actually have been going on.
Senator Stumpf, I think you were the next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a similar concern, not so much with the first part, but with the sentence on line 1.13. I think the problem is that, you know, what is a public employee? How is a public employee defined? Is that are superintendents public employees or
yeah.
I mean, how broad, how far reaching is that? I mean, we don't want to cut off the flow of information. So I think I would agree with Senator Bonhoff that I think we would like to have the districts define the policy, but allow the flow of information. And I probably do agree that handout is probably something that should not be we shouldn't be using public tax dollars to influence elections. If that's what they did, I don't know.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf. There's some others I think that have some kind. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Thompson, I think you should just put a period after public employees on line 1.8 and delete the rest of the bill. And the reason I'm saying that is because you're getting very prescriptive to what school boards can and can't do and when it comes to their policies. And when I think of some of the things, one of them was Senator Bonhoff just mentioned, but what if a teacher brings her class to the Capitol and they witness some of the things that go on around here and they are unduly influenced by a speech that Senator DeKreif makes or a speech that I make? Is that a violation of this bill? Or what if I send an email to a teacher friend of mine wanting to know their opinion on something because I don't exactly know how something works in the school class, and they respond to me? And is that a violation of this bill? Or what if a civics teacher is teaching civics to his class and goes on the internet and pulls up something pertinent to what's going on in the legislature at the time they're teaching the class? Is that a violation of this bill? I think you're setting teachers up and public employees and schools up for huge lawsuits over nothing that are things that happen all the time and just happenstance happen. The internet has become an incredibly useful tool for teachers, and just about anything that you do in regards to using the computer in a room could be construed by somebody as a violation of the policies that you're setting up here. So I think that if you want to, I think you should just delete all the bill after line 1.8 and let school boards decide how the material, time, and equipment should be used.
Senator Tomasoni, you said put a period after public employees.
On line 1.8.
Yes, but if you read that sentence.
Does it make any sense?
Read the whole sentence.
Well,
that,
maybe I don't want this bill to make sense, Madam Chair.
Sources, including but not limited to time, materials, equipment, facilities, and email, and other forms of technology used to communicate, are not used or authorized for use by public employees. So in other words, it's a complete prohibition for them using.
Right.
Can you make sense out of that question? Yes. You're the teacher here, Madam Chair. Can you make sense out of that sentence?
Well, I'm trying. Okay. I try to hear you all. Senator Thompson.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I don't think any, when we look at this, the list is advocate the election or defeat of a candidate, advocate the passage or defeat of a referendum question. solicit funds for political purposes.
That's right.
Then it talks about prohibit instructional personnel from influencing pending legislation during instructional time. No reasonable person could think that that prohibits the use of a computer to teach social studies. This is about politicking. It is not about just general use of the internet for government-related affairs.
So, Senator Thompson, by changing that, telling what the policy regarding influencing pending legislation, they're only limited to, and you might want to say classroom instructional time, that beyond that, it's okay.
Yes.
That would help.
So it's just during instructional time that you're classroom. Suggesting their policy needs to address that.
Yes, if the bell rings at the end of the last class period at 4 o'clock at 4:01, have at it.
Senator Sieben?
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, I appreciate that you're willing to work on this legislation. I think your proposal, though, still doesn't work because, as we talked about in the last committee hearing, what if there are a bunch of students taking a test and the public teacher, school teacher, wants to send me an email to say, for instance, they're opposed to the alternative teacher license legislation. I don't find that offensive or think that that's a misuse of public taxpayer money by allowing a public employee to express their opinion on legislation that will impact them. I mean, to take this a step further, do you think that we should prohibit police officers or fire or any public employees from using the internet to contact legislators? That's my first question. Then I have another question.
Senator Thompson?
Madam Chair and Senator Sieben, I guess my perspective would be I don't see why that conversation couldn't wait until after the teacher is finished with his or her responsibility of instructing the children that day. I don't see why that email needs to be sent at 2:20 instead of 4:05.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Senator Thompson, I've received a copy from a teacher from legislators who contact public school teachers, send out emails during the day asking teachers what their input is on legislation before this body or before the legislature. Would that be prohibited under this? What if they opened an email in which I solicited their comment on alternative teacher legislation? If they open the email, is that inappropriate too under this definition?
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, no. There's nothing that indicates that receiving information is in any way prohibited. What the discussion is about advocating and soliciting.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sieben.
It says your legislation must prohibit public employees from using the internet to influence pending legislation. So you're saying that by receiving communications from legislators, that's allowable under the way you see this. But if the teacher would respond then to my request for a response during the day, then that's prohibited. That should be prohibited.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, only, and Senator Sieben, only if that is an attempt to solicit or advocate. We're not talking about providing factual information. We're talking about politicking.
Madam Chair, I don't see in here where it says solicit or advocate. I mean, I think that this still needs some work then, that it's not prescriptive enough. It's still pretty vague and there's room for too much interpretation.
I think, you know, part of it, and if it's not clear, maybe it should be, the issue is engaging in these activities in classroom instructional time. Is rather than other time. That's the main key, and if that isn't clear, you know, I think the idea that you're focusing your attention on the instruction of students rather than communicating with anybody, legislators, or, you know, I suppose we could even you know, we could, there's comparable, we probably have some comparable guilt, even in committees, because there's an awful lot of electronic equipment that's being used to do something other than what's going on in the committee.
No.
But anyway, that's, excuse me for that editorial comment here. But,
that's true.
Madam Chair, can I just finish?
Yes.
One more thing.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you. I just think that the real problem here then, Senator Thompson, is on line 14, it says to influence pending legislation, because the pending legislation is dramatically different than the three bullets that are outlined in 9, 10, and 11.
Right.
And that's a much broader definition of than the way you presented it, where it's only these top three things, and that's where the inconsistency is in the language.
Who's next?
Thompson.
Thomasoni?
Thompson.
Senator Thompson.
Actually, I'll defer.
Well, Senator Thomasoni?
Okay, Madam Chair. I think the school board's probably already talked about this, but can somebody from the School Board Association tell us if school boards already do this, or is any of this already in law, or, I mean, are we duplicating anything here? Do we know that?
There's representative of the School Board Association.
Madam Chair, Senator Thomasoni, this
say,
is...
Say your name for the record.
Oh, pardon me. Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider. I'm on staff with the School Boards Association. And Senator Thomasoni, there are a list of mandated policies within the statute. This one is not currently a mandated requirement. Some districts have had to deal with this on a local basis and have adopted a policy to address this issue. But there is not a mandated statewide requirement in any of our policies that would address this issue.
I think that one of the things that I've heard a lot of times when referendums are up, it's kind of a fine line as to when the district is providing information about what they're asking for and whether it's advocacy. And that often is challenged by constituents. Usually there's a separate advocacy group, but sometimes that line is clouded, and I don't know. Some have established some policies relative to that, but I think that's a part of it. It isn't just we're not talking about just classroom teachers here. There's other issues, whether it's ballot initiative or candidates for office, et cetera, and that may be school board candidates. So,
and Madam Chair, so you have you brought up something that's in line 1.2. And 120 to 122. So that part there, it looks like we're already probably doing that because you just mentioned it.
For disseminating factual, okay, that's included. This is new language because we haven't had that in there. But trying to clarify that they are allowed. I thought, you know, how if you're asking and putting a referendum before the people, you've got to be allowed to have some explanation and provide information as to why you need it and whatever justification you have for it.
You know how your facts and my facts might be different?
Well, that often happens, yes. Isn't it? There's disagreement on those things.
Well, the thing that really worries me about this bill, Madam Chair, is that I think there's going to be lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit about what people do. I mean, on line 117 through 119, such policies shall not prohibit public employees from engaging in political activities except when they're performing their duties assigned to them under their employment contract. And that could be any time they're – I mean, there's so many possibilities of when a teacher could be doing something that is deemed to be political by somebody that I think teachers are going to be walking on eggshells when it comes to this particular bill.
Okay. Senator Wolf, oh no, you're on it, your mic. Sorry.
It was my chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to respond to what Senator Sieben said about writing emails back, and I guess I would say whether or not there's a rules or not, I would say as a teacher, to me, that would be inappropriate, and I don't care if they're writing back to respond to being solicited by their legislator, just as it would be inappropriate for me to send an email writing a letter to somebody. During that time when I'm with my students, I should be, first of all, supervising my students. Secondly, there should be plenty of things. I've got plenty of papers to correct. I've got plenty of lessons to plan for that. I think all that falls under personal subjects that you're doing. And as far as responding, I know a lot of the a lot of times we get solicited from Education Minnesota and told to write to our legislators. And I think, you know, that's inappropriate, and I don't think that's know if that's even covered in here, versus having it sent to us. If I get that kind of stuff, I always forward it to myself at home and then answer things like that from home, because I do not feel it is appropriate to do that from school. Regardless of where I'm on the issue, I don't think that's what school property should be used for.
Okay. And Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, it's been an interesting discussion, and I think some points have been made up. I would like to look at a broader level and think about this in context of many of our employers already have policies in place. Certainly as legislators, we have a policy that we abide by. We don't do campaign things from our state email address or from the using the state resources. And I think a similar thing should apply in the school districts as well. And so I can see there's maybe a few things that need to be cleaned up, but I certainly understand why we need a policy. If the school districts may already have a policy, they may not. But when you realize that 40% of our state budget actually does go to K-12 education, it does make sense that there is a state policy about what types of political or a prohibition on political activities, I think, is what most people would expect. But we've seen year after year that occasionally there's a school district that doesn't have the policy in place, or the people don't know about the policy. And every year there seems to be some example of something that everyone sitting at this table would think would be an inappropriate use of school resources for politicking. So I think there's a real need for the policy, and I would think that we could look to our employers have, what kind of policies they have for politics and politicking. They don't allow it either, and we have the same type of things here in the Senate. So I don't think it's foreign. In fact, I think it's unusual that there wouldn't be a policy in place like this.
Thank you, Ms. Altschweiger. I think you had indicated you might want to say something.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Altschweiger, Education Minnesota. And I have some handouts. If I could have the page distribute them,
sure.
Please.
Got somebody.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Nelson, I think that you are right that employers do make policies, but the employer is the school board for these employees. While you appropriate money for school districts, the employer has the right to make policies related to this. In fact, Senator Thompson brought in a Lakeville school board member who shared that they have a policy that is working and our teachers follow that policy. I do believe this is an issue of local control and freedom of speech. Many of our, you know, members have opinions that they would like to express. I am passing out right now a document to show how wise our teachers are about the use of email. We are in an age of use of internet, email. It's just daily. Every hour we're using these things. But to show Senator Sieben's point that we have opportunities for one side to express themselves, our members, our teachers, our school employees can read, but we're not supposed to respond. I have passed out three examples of emails that our local presidents or our members have received from legislators. I point you to the salmon-colored one. This is an email from, if it starts at the top, with the local president telling a local member who asked, is this legit? Is it okay if I respond to the state legislator? Senator Cruz sends an email out to all of the members in Anoka and asked them, if you look at the back side of the first page, to take a survey on the Senate.mn website. And so our members then are asking the president, is it okay, is this okay for us to fill out this survey? And she says, I'm afraid if I fill out the survey, a senator is going to come back and say, aha, I just caught teachers wasting taxpayer money emailing during the workday on taxpayer-funded technology. And the president of Anoka says, good question, that's legit, and you are right to be sure to do it on your own time. However, during lunch, before or after school. Be sure to share personal stories of your classroom experiences. Those seem to have the biggest impact. Thanks for sharing this with me. Let me know the results. So here's one example of them responding appropriately. On the green sheet is actually something that Senator Thompson had sent out an email to the president of the union, and the LA is asking, will you please distribute it to everybody? And the local union president says they respectfully decline to forward it on to their members because they have a more strict policy. And so Senator Thompson's staff gets all the emails off the website and then sends it all of them to all of them directly. Now, are we to say now that these are all sent during the workday from the Senate offices? And that's fine. I think that's very, very appropriate. But to say, Senator Thompson says that they can read it, but they can't respond about the professional things that affect them during the day. And then another one from Senator Ted Lilly, same thing. You'll see that it says that they're supposed to go to the Senate.mn website and fill out. And you can see by the questions that are included on the green sheet, and I don't know what all the other questions were, they're all questions related to political issues, legislative issues. So if they respond, are they engaged in political activity? I think about the prone restraint. This greatly impacts teachers. Can they not respond during the instructional day? So let's talk about the instructional day. On 1.15, they're prohibited during instructional time. What is that definition? As a fourth grade teacher, I had prep time between, let's say, 1 o'clock and 1:40. Would that be counted instructional time? If all of my students in my fourth grade class were taken, or let's say I'm a special ed teacher and all the kids are taken to a field trip, but I don't go on the field trip, can I respond about prone restraint during that day because it's instructional time but my kids aren't there? This is just one-way speech. If you look at line one, beginning on line 1.17, they'd be prohibited, public employees would be prohibited from engaging in political activities except when they are performing duties assigned to them under their employment contract or with the district or representing their employer. In other words, you're saying they can speak if someone gives them permission. Is that how we want to view the freedom of speech? And then I would ask, why are teachers being and school employees being singled out? Are we asking, telling other units or employee groups, police or firefighters, you know, to saying that they can't respond? Their professional job is to do the things that we tell them to through standards and everything, and you make decisions about their lives and their professional work. It seems to me that if they have free time, we should be allowing them to respond to you if you ask questions. The Department of Department of Administration has ruled that school employee addresses are public data, so anybody can send emails to them. But you're saying that they can't be involved in political activity, et cetera. And what is on line 1.17, what is political activities? And line 1.11, what are political purposes? If the American Heart Association is doing some kind of drive and they're asking our school employees or let's say the union decides that they want to help out the American Heart Association and it's going to be for something political, can they not do that? Or is it okay only if the school board says that activity is okay and this activity is not? On line 1.19, does that mean that in a school building that when there's a election for a union president that they can't even get involved in that because it says a candidate for elective office? I think a union president or the local president or the secretary treasurer, you couldn't be involved in that. And so I think the current process is working. Our school boards are very smart. Many of them have negotiated the use of facilities in their contract, and some of them have developed policies related to this. So I think that we should not mandate what those school board policies look like or those negotiated agreements look like, and let them do their work because they have been doing well. And these examples clearly illustrate that our members are making very wise choices. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you. There are several people that, while you've been talking, have asked to be heard, and that's Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I just wanted to comment here. And I think this is good that, if the local has the opportunity to determine what's appropriate and inappropriate. But I do want to make a comment that as far as to Education Minnesota, I wish Education Minnesota would use this kind of format. Education Minnesota does not send us emails that say, what do you think about? What do you think about alternative pathways to teaching? What do you think about prone restraint? What do you think about? Education Minnesota sends us an email that says, this is wrong for teachers. Contact your legislators. Here's the link. That's the kind of stuff we get at school. So there's no question involved. To me, there's a big difference in soliciting and saying, here's how you should feel about this. Contact your legislator. Versus saying, here's an issue. We want to know where you stand on this. What's your opinion? And again, as far as determining what should and shouldn't be allowed and leaving it up to the local, I just wanted to comment on Education Minnesota that I find it interesting that they're critiquing these emails that came. When we get an email from Education Minnesota, it's never a question. It's never, where do you stand on something? It is telling us. Alternative pathways. We don't want that. Contact your legislator. Right to work. Wrong for Minnesota. Right to work for less. Contact your legislator. LIFO, bad. Bad for tenure. Contact your legislator. We get those emails that do not ask us where we stand. You don't ask the teachers, what do you think of the LIFO bill? What do you think of alternative pathways for teachers? We get emails saying, this is not good for us. Contact your legislators and say this. You go to the link, and it has all the words that you can send right to your legislator. That's what we get at school.
Okay, Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, we've been working very diligently as we've been listening, and I think we have an amendment that we'd like to offer.
I'm in collusion
with Senator Stomp and Senator Bonoff, so this is a joint amendment, okay. Friends. We believe the issues may be addressed, and still the gist of the bill stay in place to omit lines 1.12 through 1.19. They seem a little bit duplicative anyway. And then also delete line 1.23 and 1.24 and change the effective date to 6 months following final enactment. So insert the words section is effective 6 months following final enactment.
State a month the final enactment.
This section is effective, and cross six. Out the word the and day, and insert the word 6 months.
Okay.
Words 6 months.
Madam Chair, could you have Senator Nelson? Would you repeat the rest of it for me so I get the exact line?
Yes. Yes. Delete lines 1.12 through 1.19, and delete lines 1.23 through 1.24.
Senator Thompson.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I don't have a problem with the six-month provision holding off. In fact, I think, frankly, that makes sense, given that that allows some time to implement the policy. Let me look at 1.17 through 1.19. I guess I'm going in reverse order here.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
It seemed to me, Senator Thompson, that if the first part of the bill, lines 1.15 through 1.111, were followed, that these other pieces would – it seems a little duplicative. It seems like these issues were already addressed in the first part of your bill.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson.
Senator Thompson.
I also obviously, I haven't had much time to think through this. It just came to me right now. But 1.17 through 1.19, I don't necessarily have an objection to. I would not want to see 1.12 through 1.16 removed. That is what has been discussed by the stakeholders in this in an attempt to specifically address the kinds of issues that are demonstrated in the various handouts last time and the like. So I would consider 1.17 or 1.19 a friendly amendment. I would consider the effective date being changed from the day following enactment to 6 months later a friendly amendment, but I would object and would not accept or would encourage the committee to vote against the deletion of lines 1.12 through 1.16.
And Senator Thompson, she's also troika here is recommending deleting 1.23 and 2.4 as well.
Yes, and I would accept that.
Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, just a comment. Senator Thompson, I also agree that the types of things that we were discussed here are inappropriate. And it seems to me, though, that quite your language would, you've already mentioned in line 1.6 that publicly funded resources, including but not limited to time, materials, equipment, that would be computers, facilities and email and other forms of technology, and that would be the internet, might not be used to communicate or used or not used to or authorized for election issues, passage or defeat of referendums, solicit funds for political purposes. So it just seems to me that you have said it very succinctly in lines 1.9 to 1.11, but then you're trying to say it again in lines 1.12 to 1.16, and that's where kind of the confusion is. And so what is it that you think lines 1.12 and 1.16 would prohibit that lines 1.9 and 1.15 to 1.11 won't?
Senator Nelson, I think the key part there is influence pending legislation. That is what's different than what's in those earlier lines. Well, you're
okay.
Reflecting on
is
these
that
things
it?
Senator Nino has asked to be.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were
an idea, maybe?
I don't know if you were ahead of Nino or Senator Nino.
Well,
go ahead.
Madam Chair, I kind of had an idea, too, so maybe we could collude a little bit.
Should we vote on the part of the
No, it's related to your proposal.
Okay.
I kind of like the first part of line 1.23, making it readily accessible. I don't know that it has to be in paper format. I'm not aware of – maybe there are some school districts that don't have a website, but I'm not aware of any that don't. And it could be easily put onto a website as a one-time event, and that's publicly available. I don't know that it has to be in paper copy. But I kind of like the idea of setting the expectation that it's going to be – well, not, this would be a requirement, I guess, but – that we expect it to be publicly available along with – I know the school districts I represent post all of their policies on their website anyway. That's just good practice, I think. Mm-hmm. The and it may be that if line 1.12, if we use that first sentence with a nominal addition of language, maybe we can get to a middle ground on that as well. What I marked out, and Senator Bonhoeff is whispering, she was thinking something similar. What I marked out is just keeping that first sentence all the way through the first half of line 1.13, but include after the word use on 1.12 and times of use. So the way it would read, the policy also must define appropriate use and times of use of all computers at a school site with internet access available for employee use. It's a little less prescriptive, but it also sets the expectation that there's some definition around what and when appropriate use would be for those items. I'm not making that motion. I'm not amending your amendment. I'm just suggesting maybe that could get us there. I don't know what Senator Thompson thinks. I don't know what Senator Nelson thinks. I'm done now, Madam Chair.
Senator Bono?
Well, Madam Chair, I was going to add the words "to advocate for defeat pending legislation," but I think that that's really is too gray and, again, leaves us too wide open. So I think Senator Nenow's idea to have the – to keep lines 1.12 ending at the period for employee use during – you know, and include the part of – I concur with Senator Nenow.
As well as in the time?
Yeah.
Whatever words, I didn't get it all down.
Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson?
I would accept that as a friendly amendment to my amendment.
And just incorporate, sure.
Oh, so Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we talk about the use of computers, we're not just talking about the use of a physical piece of technology. I assume that we're also talking about, like, when you use your smartphone. This is my smartphone, but when I push it and send a message, I'm actually using not my network, I'm using the state's network. So how do we have school boards define, I mean, I'm sure they'll come up with some policy, but I don't think it's going to be so cut and dried I just can't imagine how they'd define it, and how you'd ever enforce that. I could see the hardware part of it, but the other part of it, it's pretty difficult. Madam Chair, just to summarize, I think the important thing here is that school districts would have a policy. I think that would be important. I think what's in that policy, I think the district should really be have a good discussion of it and what that district and what that community would feel comfortable coming up with. And I'm sure most districts would advocate that the policy has to be public and everybody has to know what the policy is. I think that's really what we need to kind of focus on.
Okay, let me bring it back here to what this amendment appears to be right now. And you've accepted as friendly on what lines, 1.12, well, 1.13, that yep. sentence, but the policy also must define appropriate use and time of use of all computers at a school site with internet access available for employee use. Mm-hmm. That was, you were suggesting that you would include that in your amendment to Senator
yes.
Nelson. And then it would be deleting the rest from 1.3, beginning with the policy. Delete that in lines 1.4, 5, and 1.16. And deleting 1.17, 1.8, and 1.9. And I don't know if this was accepted or not, but there was some discussion here too on 1.23 that all school districts must make these policies readily accessible to the public. Mm-hmm. Maybe period?
Yes.
Without saying yeah. wow?
Yes. Yeah.
And then the effective date, the section is effective 6 months following final enactment. Is that your amendment?
Madam Chair, very good. Yes. I just have one comment. I don't want to muddy the waters, but I do think it's important. I didn't understand as I originally drafted that amendment about influencing pending legislation, and I see that's one of the concerns that Senator Thompson is trying to address. So by striking the language, I don't know that if we have addressed that concern, but I will say that I do like to hear from my teachers about what they think on issues. So I'm hoping there's another way to get at what you're driving at, Senator Thompson. We certainly don't want it to be, we don't want these resources, whether it be time or computers or internet, to be misused as far as either the time should be doing contractual duties or a misuse of those resources. But on the other hand, it seems to me the way it's written right now, without my amendment, it would preclude teachers from actually weighing in on those very issues upon which they are stakeholders. So we do need to get their way in.
So would this,
your amendment is, I will.
Well, I would see, it's
yes, the, we'll
the stick school, with it. The school boards are going to be developing these policies. Should mm-hmm. we entrust them to struggle with
yes.
this language rather
yes.
than us sitting here, you know, trying to
yes.
micromanage every word? Senator
yes.
Thompson.
But may I point out, Madam Chair, we seem to be losing in this whole discussion. This issue, this legislation deals with during instructional time. That's the point of this and using government resources. So when Senator Nelson says, I want to be able to hear from my teachers, the implication is they can't speak to us. Not true. Just we want it not when during classroom time. That's the point. This is not a prohibition of speaking to legislators, city council members, school board members, or the president of the United States on any political issue. It's just not using public resources and not doing it during instructional time.
Well, Senator Thompson, listen to the first sentence as slightly amended with Senator Dino's suggestion. The policy, the 1.1, 2, and 3, the policy also must define appropriate use and time of use
mm-hmm.
of all computers at a school site with internet access available for employee use. Would that not give some direction to school boards to establish that, you know, within their contract or classroom or student contact time? Would they not think of that, or do we have to tell them that with that precision? That's kind of the question.
Madam Chair, that's fine. I understand the point. I guess.
I mean, I'm not trying to badger you. I'm just trying to see if we can bring some thoughts together. We've all, you know, there's been contributions and disagreements and whatever. But
no, I understand, and we do want to make this something that is workable. There's no question about that. That's why we laid it on the table and worked with some folks to attempt to do that. I think that. We, of course, frequently talk about this balance between what we mandate here or dictate from St. Paul and what's left to the locals. And frankly, you know, in my world, we would leave more responsibility to school districts, but that would also mean the funding. You know, at this point, the vast majority of funding for schools is coming from here, as Senator Nelson correctly pointed out, 40% of a state budget. And so I think to kind of set some minimum standards makes sense.
Well, Senator Thompson, we've spent about an hour in discussing this now
yes.
for something that was laid over to get worked out. That didn't quite happen. And I think we either need to move on because there are several other bills that we'd like to finish today, and I know there's people have other kind of time commitments too. Should we act,
Madam Chair,
this?
I'm not opposed to voting on the amendment if that's
okay.
what you're asking.
Let's vote on that amendment and see if we can come to a conclusion here. Does everybody understand
yes.
that amendment as I stated it?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor of the amendment that Senator Nelson's, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now, is there any further discussion, or can we take some action on the bill that Senator Thompson moves the passage of Senate File 577 as amended be recommended to pass. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Appreciate it.
So, next is Senator Nelson. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for allowing me to present Senate File 2059. Senate File 2059 deals with staff development funds and how those funds must be appropriated. A little bit of history. You will recall last year that we removed a staff development set-aside for 2012 and 13. In other words, districts are now able to determine how much money they want to set aside for staff development, and that is through 2012 and 2013. This bill gives districts a little bit more flexibility in stating that the districts have control of those staff development dollars, that they can determine how to disperse those staff development dollars. Currently, staff development dollars, 50% go to the school sites, 25% go for district-wide, and 25% for best practice grants. And this bill actually is just giving our schools freedom to determine, our school districts, how to use those staff development dollars. I think it's important for a couple reasons. We're asking our schools to do a lot. We're asking for increased accountability. And it's important that school districts be able to align all their arrows, so to speak, as they go forward with staff development. There could be a new reading series that's adopted. And so it's important that they have access to determining how those staff development dollars will be used. In the language, I have the Shazana with the Minnesota School Board Association that could also address this.
Good afternoon, Chair, members. My name is Snezhana Besanov, and I'm speaking here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. First of all, I'd like to thank Senator Nelson for bringing forward this proposal, all the co-authors for your support, and committee for your consideration. In accordance with Delegate Assembly Resolution and 2012 Legislative Platform, MSBA asked for flexibility of the staff development statute by allowing school districts to also have the flexibility in allocating of the funds. School boards desire for all teachers to have, and other school district staff for that matter, to have high quality professional growth and development opportunities, for they are designed to improve classroom instruction, enable individuals to grow professionally, and help teachers implement new technology and teaching strategies, ultimately helping to achieve fundamental purpose of achieving, of improving student learning. So under current law, school districts are required to set aside 2% of the basic general education revenue for staff development purposes. And as Senator Nelson mentioned, that's something that's, was waived last year for the current biennium. And so Minnesota Statute 122A-61 dictates the staff development revenue must be used for specific staff development activities as listed in the statute. And Senator Nelson went through that, but I'll just go through that real quickly. School boards are required to allocate 50% of staff development revenue to a district, to school sites for the per teacher basis, 25% for district-wide staff development activities, and 25% for grants to school sites for best practices methods. Senate File 2059 would eliminate this financial restriction of 50-25-25, allowing for local control and distributing staff development dollars. MSBA believes that staff development should be an issue for local school districts and their staff to decide. Once a school district determines the staff development needs in the district, the board, in consultation with the teachers, should be able to determine how the school spends the money and on which activities. The automatic division of staff development funds can be challenging for schools. as the need exists for quality district-wide training that includes such items as newly adopted teacher and principal evaluation, and CLB waiver requirements and digital learning opportunities, just to name a few. And especially in the tight financial times, it can even be expensive to divide the dollars in such a rigid automatic formula. And I do want to note that Senate File 2059 does allow districts to continue utilizing the current model if that's something that works for them. School districts are still required to create staff development plans to establish the committees and report annually to the Department of Education. And so, again, just I want to note the MSBA believes that staff development should be determined by local districts and their staff and their teachers. And so we ask for your support of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stump.
thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to take a moment and say that the staff development is, I think, one of the most important things that we can do to increase the quality of our teaching. We have manipulated and used the staff development in a number of different ways. One, obviously, is to allow the use of that staff development funds for things other than staff development. But the other one is probably a more important issue. And as we lay some foundation for the next budget, and I know the department is here. The QCOMP dollars, which comes to, I believe it's about, well, maybe it can be helped here, $260 or $360 per pupil. I think
in that range.
Somewhere's in there. About 40% of the districts have access to those dollars. My suggestion is that if we want to have good qualified teachers in the state, that should be accessible to all school districts across the state. And a proposal that we talked about a number of years ago was take the existing staff development dollars and program, and that's pretty well defined in statute as to how it can be used, and take the QCOMP program, melt those two programs together, and make a kind of a hybrid staff development program across the state of Minnesota, and one that will work very, very well with the evaluation program, or the evaluation that we've put in place, which is going to take place in a couple years. Because I think the evaluation does need to be reinforced with a kind of a peer evaluation, a staff development component, and I think that's a challenge for the education committee as we look ahead to the next biennial budget.
Senator Stump, I think part of the reason some of this approach of how to divvy up that money and things that to use it for do not necessarily have any connection or any proven link with improving student achievement. And I think at least the QCOMP was focused on that, because if it was going to be recognized both for both the career ladder approach or the compensation part, it was linked to student achievement. And I think we need to, if we were going to add anything at some point in statute, or I think we need to make some changes that staff development focus should be on equipping teachers to be more effective using, research-based, proven kinds of things, whether it's replication or whatever, that do improve student achievement and help to close that achievement gap. I think that's becoming increased pressure, and therefore we need to focus instead of it just being some of the latest guru that's running around with the you know, a new idea, and we just spend thousands to bring them in for a day workshop. You know, I'm not sure that we have any evidence that that has made a lot of difference. But there are things that have been, you know, chosen to invest in that, that have made a difference and go along that line. And I hope that we could, whether this stuff is kind of in the way of that, and I think it merits. But you're right, we do need to find ways, whether it's linking these programs, but keeping that focus on the student achievement. Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Lundeen would also like to testify briefly, and I thank you for answering Senator Stump's question, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Is there any other discussion on this point? I believe there is any other testimony to it?
Mr. Lundeen.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. Just want to briefly voice our organization's support for Senator Nelson's bill, Senate File 2059. I think one thing that needs to be kept in mind, and I think it's been mentioned here, just going a little more deeply on it, is that there were two items passed last year, the teacher evaluation piece and also then the literacy plan. Those are statewide initiatives, and I believe that, you know, to get those statewide initiatives to be implemented in the best way possible, we're going to require more flexibility with staff development at the local level. Ms. Allswagger's to my left, and I'm sure she's going to tell folks here that this can be negotiated locally. My analogy to that would be is that if you had two, say you have two boxes of Girl Scout cookies, and Ms. Allswagger takes one box of the Girl Scout cookies and then said, let's negotiate about the other half of the Girl Scouts, other box of cookies. I think that's what's going on right here, right now, is that half of the money, half the staff development money is taken off the table and goes to the teachers for their purposes. I'm not going to say that the teachers waste that money or whatever it is. I'm sure that it's well spent, but is it spent in conjunction with board goals and with, you know, further with statewide goals that you're promulgating. I think that currently there are staff development committees. Every district has a staff development committee. Those staff development committees include teacher members. I believe that that is the appropriate place to negotiate how staff development is determined or how the programs that will be determined. And we've long and thought that the 50-25-25 split of the staff development program is not in the best interest of the state. So thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Allswagger?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswagger, Education, Minnesota. And it is
did Mr. Lundell put words in your mouth?
Actually, I would like all of the cookies. Let's share those. Staff development money, though, we can share. Madam Chair, I want to make sure that people understand that on line 1.16, this is the cookie argument, that a district may annually waive the requirement to reserve their basic revenue under this section if a majority vote of the licensed teachers in the district and a majority vote of the school board agreed to a resolution to waive the requirement. In fact, I was told by the Anoka-Hennepin Teachers Union president that they actually proposed that to their board recently because of the budget constraints. So, you know, in tight financial times, our teachers are very reasonable. But let's think about the requirements that we have been putting on to our teachers and our school districts. Senator Olson, you hold literacy near and dear to your heart, and Senator Bonnet, Senator Nelson, we appreciate that. In the K-3 literacy plan, there is a requirement to use staff development. In QCOMP, there is a requirement to use staff development. In the new evaluation law, there is a requirement to use staff development funds. And what we're really saying is that the teachers are not going to have the voice. Education Minnesota will be one of the first groups to say, we do not want teachers and school staff to be using staff development for drive-by workshops. In fact, we have a program called Teachers as Learners and Leaders. In fact, the legislature funded a significant, I think it was between $1 and $3 million at one point, to kick this off to try to help with the staff development with teachers. We invest a lot of our own money to educate our teachers about the staff development law. An important piece is to look at not only the language before you in 122A.61, but 122A.660 has the requirement that an advisory staff development committee be at the district level. They are to determine goals. They have a whole list of effective staff development activities, numbers 1 through 7, and then it goes on to A and B, on what they can and can't do. That is not in the bill before you, but it is law. They are restricted on how they can spend their money, all based on what the school district goals are and those requirements. I mean, we're going to evaluate teachers, but we're not going to give them any say now about their staff development money and how it's spent. Education Minnesota is informing our members about appropriate uses of staff development activities. We believe that we should use test data. We should use information from school boards, from teachers, to determine action plans so that we can have quality staff development. If you want real change, you empower the people closest to the children. And if they have access to how that money is spent, they will make better choices. They'll take more personal responsibility for how those monies are spent, rather than the decisions being made solely farther away from the kids.
Well, Ms. Alschrager, we've got to keep moving on here, but the reality is, with the things that are in place, I'm not sure how you do that without involving teachers. This is not intended. I think it's this specific allocation of how it's spread. If, for example, in the literacy plan, that staff development is an important part of it, but part of that is qualifying you for the literacy incentive aid. And let's see now, if you've got more proficient by third grade, you're going to get more money. Or if you've got more growth, you're going to get more money. So let's see, would investment in staff development make some sense that would actually lead to greater rewards as well as student achievement? There are some things that I think locally our districts, and I don't know how, even with the administrators and principals as instructional leaders, as their evaluation is developed, which one of the reasons I've been strongly supportive of getting that off the ground even ahead of the teacher evaluation, is that I think their effectiveness is related to how well they relate to the people that they're working with and have that input in order to have effective implementation of change and new ideas and plans. I don't know how you get along without that. And so I don't know that the removal of this language it's not touching some of that other advisory. A lot of that's been left in place, as you have pointed out. This does not do anything to enhance that. It just opens up the door for greater flexibility where, in order to achieve these goals that are in your best interest. So let's move on here. Thank you very much for your input.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And I want to thank Senator Nelson for bringing this forward. It's an important issue. And, Madam Chair, you just took all my testimony, so I'll leave it at that. You said it very well. What we're removing is the one-size-fits-all prescriptive mandate from the state. It's not removing the staff development committees. Any school superintendent or principals or school board members worth their salt are going to continue to gather input from their staff. They value that. They know that you need to have buy-in from your staff if it's going to be successful. And everything else you just said, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, Senator Nelson.
Senator Nelson?
Madam Chair, just briefly, and thank you very much. I just want to make sure the committee notes that there's nothing prohibiting districts from determining that they want to put 50% or 75% of their money at the school sites. This is just allowing them to have discretion about how to allocate that money. And in times of developing a new reading series, doing a new iPad rollout, whenever they have a new district initiative, it could be the literacy grants, they need to be able to align all of those arrows. And so it's very important that we give them flexibility to determine how to spend all of those funds.
Okay. I believe there is an amendment to this, but I would like to exercise the ability to interject here about tomorrow's meeting. I think you did get a message that we have the potential of meeting beginning at 12:30. Oh, would you prefer that to waiting until 3?
Yes.
If we get enough input back, I know there may be some overlap. There's state governments is starting at 11:30, so there's at least an hour. They only have a couple of bills up. If they have, if we can keep things going, a number of us are on that committee from 11:30 to 12:30. We could get an earlier start that would make that easier for a lot of you. Are you okay with that? Now, some of you have replied. Can I see a raise of hands that would like to start at 12:30?
Like start at 11.
Well, we have space at 12. So, Senator Sieben, you would have a problem with that.
Well, I can try to change the babysitter.
You what?
I need to try to change the babysitter.
Bring him with.
Unless you want them to show up, which probably isn't a good idea.
I couldn't hear you, but
the babysitter.
Oh, the babysitter.
Yeah.
She'll just try and change it.
I'll try.
Okay. Senator Harrington, are you?
I've got judiciary from at that same time, so
you I'll might just, be able to.
I'll bounce like I'm doing now. I'm bouncing. They're still downstairs in 15. I've been bouncing up and down, so that's fine. So
it looks like most of you. Okay, we will plan tomorrow then on a meeting at 12:30. Very good. Okay, let's proceed, Senator Tomasoni.
Well, Madam Chair, it seems to me we're going back and forth on this because this language was put in law for a reason. And I'm assuming the reason that it wasn't put in law is because it wasn't getting distributed based on the way the language is in the law, and that school boards were using it for all the reasons that people were objecting to. And so this is being taken out now with the logic of course, they will use the money correctly. And I got a funny feeling it was put in law because, of course, they weren't using the money correctly. And so I'm trying to figure out if we're just going back and forth here to see who's right and who's wrong.
Well, I think since that was put in place, some of the pressures have changed that I think can drive some better decision-making of how that is used. And so even some of the limitations of nature, the teachers at Minnesota realizes is what she called the drive-by kinds of staff development or workshops, things that do not necessarily work. That's lifting some of those kinds of restrictions and the percentages. But I don't know how you get by with when staff development is required for reaching the goals of a number of things, as Ms. Alschweiger pointed out, without making that investment and engaging teachers in it. And that's that's all that is being asked is for some flexibility in that apportionment, that piece, because we've not taken those other elements out of the legislation, or this bill does not, I shouldn't say we, the bill as proposed is not doing that. You're looking at me with...
Well, I'm just wondering why we had it in the first place.
Well, I was here, Senator Stumpf, you were too, when this was put in place, and I think there was some feeling that it was more of the central big workshop, that there was things that could be better done at the building level. I think that has changed, and we're getting much more embedded kinds of staff development that will work to help develop the skills for student achievement. But, sir?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is to Senator Tomasoni's point. I'm Don Sinner. I'm the president of Education Minnesota Lakeville. And as we work In my unit, we have waived $4.6 million over 4 years to help the district. My unit has taken on the checklist. We do it at a union expense to pick up, to help the district meet the needs of our students. When you have the split of district so much proportion, site so much proportion, there is an individual difference between departments at a secondary level, especially, where there's specialty needs to keep up with STEM initiatives, other things, and the fear that I have and some of my local members would have is when you take, and I understand flexibility and needing in limited resources to move that around, but when you take away the mandatory part to go to a site and have that site's members determine how to best use that for the students at that site, We had a excellent building that closed the achievement gap and worked single focusedly at ELL students. And without those funds, they would not have been able to focus that point at that site while other sites were using them at different levels. And we have a very good system of guaranteeing funding for site needs based on student demographics at certain buildings within my large district. And what happens is you run the risk of districts running district initiatives and not recognizing the individual needs at individual sites. They can, but the risk is in limited funds that doesn't happen anymore.
Well, Mr. Skinner, that you're making a good case for site-governed schools, and we've got the capability of doing that, well, and we're working on that even with individualized some of the initiatives that we're looking at making more available, and I hope that you will engage with some of these ideas because I think those are more effective ways than trying to prescribe certain percentages in this particular statute. Thank you very much. Senator Bonner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. I just remember being on the Hopkins High School Site Council before I came here, and even back then, and so that was in like 2003, the teachers there were talking about they wish they had that flexibility so they could decide how to use that money. So I actually strongly support Senator Nelson's bill.
Okay, thank you. Senator Wieger?
Thank you, Madam Chair. May I offer the A4? It is a segue to another...
Yes.
Education-related item, but the A4 is in your packet. It is the CPR training.
I was asked, Madam Chair, CPR. Might I just add, this is a friendly amendment.
Senator Nelson.
I want the committee to know right up front. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, members, you recall Senate File 1908, authored by Senator Hall, addressed CPR training. You get at least 30 minutes training for a 7th through 12th grade, and the details at your request have been worked out, I believe, with the School Boards Association, Heart Association, and so I believe we have a non-controversial and very much needed provision, and I urge your support.
Okay, and I think that the School Board Association has been involved. Could you, is somebody representing them that could come and attest to their support? Mr. Schneider?
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Board Association. And the Heart Association and the Red Cross and Senator Nelson have been kind enough to work with us and talk about some of our concerns on this. And I believe that they have narrowed this to a point where we believe the benefit of this, as well as the flexibility that comes along with the staff development, will be better for our school districts and more flexibility on the staff. You got to take the good with the bad. And honestly, this is a bad piece, but I think you understand that this is a compromise business, and I think we think it makes sense for school districts to do this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Feinman. I think Senator Hall may be hiding behind a pillar there. This was his bill initially. Would you like to say something about it?
I didn't know I was hiding, but...
No, well, you were out of my line of vision.
Yeah. All to say is I know the bill has gone through this committee before, and I appreciated the support that we've had. And we have worked as what we can, and we think we've got a good bill here, so I hope you would support that.
Okay,
and thanks
good.
To Senator Nelson for adding it. Okay. Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would wish to testify on this amendment? If not... Senator Wieger has moved the A4 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any more discussion or anything, last words on the bill before we vote on it as amended? Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, I just thank the committee for their consideration and would ask for a yes vote.
Okay. All in favor signify by the passage of Senate File 2059 as amended. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
Thank you very much, Senator Nelson. We have the next is Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm hoping this one will be a fairly quick one.
Senate File 1990.
Senate File 1990 simply expands the use of non-public pupil textbook aid to include technology sources. So just really quickly to walk you through the legislation, on page one, essentially you just see the definition there, the changing, allowing that to happen. And then if you look on page two, lines 2.3 through 2.5, that defines software and other educational technology, which is used throughout the legislation. And what that includes is software programs, applications, hardware, or any other electronic educational technology. So all this is doing is just allowing a little bit of flexibility in the use of those dollars. We're seeing a lot of things move towards technology-based educational materials. So with that, I would take any questions.
Are there any questions? Discussion?
Good.
If not, let's Senator Cruz. Department has got a word.
Madam Chair, members, Darren Cordy with the Department of Education. I apologize to Senator Cruz for not bringing up this earlier. I had spoke with Ms. Yunker or Ms. Butler earlier about adding some language that Dr. Melcher had suggested that would bring in 123B-A43, which regards the use of individualized instructional materials. And this just makes sure that the software and other technology that's included in this bill would not be allowed to be used for religious courses, devotional exercises, religious training, or other activity. I did speak with Mr. Noll.
No, I'm sorry. Mr. Corte, I think we already have an amendment drafted to that effect.
Fantastic.
It's the A1 amendment, and I think it's being distributed right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No. Would you get one to the author and to Mr. Cordy, please, so they can review it while you're... Thank you. Have you got it on this side? Have they got it on this side?
Madam Chair and members, is you know, this is the first chance anyone's spoke to me about this. I guess you know, as I'm looking at the legislation as initially drafted, and I look at line 1.19 where it says only such secular, neutral, non-ideological materials as are available. I mean, I guess I wonder, and maybe staff can help me on this.
Well, that's current law.
Correct, and so for that reason, I'm a little confused as to the need of this amendment, and maybe if staff or could help explain that to me,
Madam Chair. If I may, or if Ms. Yunker would or Butler would like to. Elaborate. Our only concern was that we're talking about software and other technology. We could be talking about computers or iPads and such that are being distributed to the student, where the technology itself isn't necessarily religious in nature. However, it could be used for religious purposes, and this would just clarify that that would be prohibited under this statute.
Senator Nino.
I'm just curious, as we're talking other technology, for example, if a student was loaned a laptop, how that has the potential to access religious websites to stream religious podcasts, whatever the implications there? If that's not what it's intended to be used for, but it has the potential because it has Wi-Fi, for example. I don't know. I'm just curious.
Well, I'm puzzled a little bit. Now, the bill keeps referring to software or other educational technology. In the amendment that you want, you just say other software and other technology. That's rather broad, and it's maybe the heart. It's actually the hardware is what we're starting to talk about rather than the software, the instructional part of it. I think I need some clarification on the meaning.
Well, Madam Chair and members, I think where you're getting that definition from of software and other educational technologies is that exact definition that I went through in my quick presentation on lines 2.3 to 2.5 of the original legislation, and it very clearly defines in that the software portion of this, as well as the hardware portion of this.
Well, I see what it's the amendment that I'm questioning, because it appears that the amendment is assuming other technology, and there's some references that have been made to the hardware. And I don't think that this money that goes to non-public schools is for hardware. It's only for the textbooks or the instructional materials, rather than the means, any hardware means of delivering them. Maybe you could clarify.
Madam Chair, again, we'd be happy to add in educational technology into the amendment. That wasn't the intention to capture all technology. It was just to capture, as Senator Cruz said, it was just taken so it matches up with the original bill, particularly Section 2, where it does include software, other educational technology as software, programs, applications, or hardware.
And I think so in the amendment then, would you members insert in each place after other, put educational to make it consistent with the rest of the bill? And then I think you're just inserting it in another part of law that is current law.
Madam Chair, that's correct, just to keep it consistent across statute.
And that section of law is referenced in your, Senator Cruz, in your definition of the software and educational technology on page 2, line 4, referencing the same area that they're concerned about inserting those words. Senator Cruz?
I guess, Madam Chair and members, I'm struggling with this one. This the counterpart to this legislation is on the House floor right now. It's been introduced for quite a while, and this is the first time that I've been approached with this. You know, I've done a lot of work on school choice legislation, and well aware that there are other resources, whether it be busing or the such that we use for private education or non-public education, if you will. So I guess that, you know, I really have some hesitations about this amendment.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Mr. Carty.
Senator Cruz is correct. The companion bill is on the floor. This was not amended into the bill. Well, it was in the House Finance Committee. However, I did approach Senator Garofalo and House staff, and it is currently in Senator Garofalo's House omnibus bill, which was on the House floor today.
Yeah, Senator Cruz, I don't think it does any damage to what you are attempting to do of expanding that, because it's adding the same language for inconsistency in two of the sections of law that you have named in your definition on 2.4. So it isn't changing the thrust of it all. I think we've corrected the situation by adding educational, keeping that terminology consistent, that somehow this was going to be related to how the schools use their technologies, i.e. computers or whatever they do use. That has nothing to do with that. So I think you're okay, but I'd like to move on. So I hope that we can act on this, and if you find more reason for being troubled, this will be going to the floor, and we can also deal with it there.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm completely comfortable with that. I guess I would only ask if staff could just briefly explain from their perspective what effect this would have on folks who would use this. What type of limitations would that put on them?
I think should be Mr. Corte, you can share this with the department, that it's very appropriate to talk to the chief author of bills like this when these things come up, because then we can prevent this kind of thing from happening and get these things worked out. And I think everybody is more content with the changes made if that would be done. So I'd appreciate that.
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
Is there somebody that would want to explain what this?
Mr. Melman. Madam Chair, it's my understanding what's happening here is that Dr. Melcher is making an appropriate recommendation to bring in software and other educational technology now with the suggested amendment to conform this statute with the changes that are contemplated in Senator Cruz's bill. I think it's a technical conforming of the two statutes. I don't see that it changes much materially.
So we need to move the amendment. This is who would like to move the amendment? Senator Stumpf moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 1990. If there's no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. So Senator Cruz moves Senate File 1990 as amended. Be recommended to pass, and I believe this would go to the floor, general orders.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Is there no further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed? Aye. The motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Wow.
We have one more that we've had patient superintendent sitting here, Senator Bonoff. Yep. Senate File 2420.
Okay. Senator Bonoff. Thank you, Madam Chair. I know the hour is late, so we will be brief. The bill that I have the A1 amendment.
Okay, and that's an author's amendment.
That is in your
packet. Senator Bonoff moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 2420. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, when we passed the basic skills test requirement and the governor signed it into law, we later learned that there was a group of teachers that would be an unintended consequence, is there was a group of teachers that would actually lose their job pretty quickly with the new law. And that group of teachers is being addressed in the amendment, and that group are immersion teachers. And in particular, I have the superintendent from Minnetonka, because Minnetonka has made a significant investment to the immersion program, and they actually have, I believe, 2,000 students in several immersion programs, and they recruit these teachers from other countries. They come here. I have a stack of emails that have just come in the last couple days that's pretty thick from the parents of these students, and the parents are thrilled with their children's education, and they are saying, do not do anything that would have us lose our teachers. And so the amendment is very narrow so as to not undermine the law. It says that basically this only refers to those who have obtained the one-year license to teach, and that's how these teachers are here. They're taught in a language immersion program during they are teaching currently in a language immersion program during the 2011-2012 school year. They've been granted a visa by the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, and they may be approved by the Board of Teaching to continue to teach through the end of the 2013-2014 school year. We have worked with the Board of Teaching. I've been working closely with Senator Daley, and this is a very narrowly defined agreement that would help this particular case. And it wasn't just Minnetonka, by the way. I thought we might have had somebody from St. Cloud who was going to join us, but there are other immersion programs all over the state that this was going to affect.
Dr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's a great pleasure to be here and talk about this important subject. As you might imagine, with 2,000 students in this program and several dozen teachers, it's a very critical issue for the Minnetonka School District. I'm here to urge you to support Senate File 2420, which fixes, as Senator Bonhoff said, an important unintended consequence of the new law that was created when House File 1770 was passed. We were not aware of the impact until after it had been passed, and we began to study what would happen to our immersion teachers. I appreciate your indulgence in considering this small but significant change for Minnetonka in the new law, and as Senator Bonhoff said, other immersion programs in the state. These are important to the future of education in our state, in our nation, and for students who expect to thrive in the international culture and economic climate. The reason the difficulties are created for our program is that while the focus of the new law is appropriate, we have teachers in immersion who are hired because they can teach either Chinese or Mandarin Chinese or Spanish authentically. These teachers have some English skills, and we hire them, but they're not hired to teach students in English. In fact, they do not teach their children at all in English. The value of immersion is the children do not even know if they can speak English until they probably get to fourth or fifth grade. So they want to that's the part of immersion that's very important. The existing law allowed several appropriate paths for these teachers to get approval for teaching in our classrooms. And we hold these teachers to the same high standards of hiring that we hold our English teachers to, but we do not expect them nor want them to be teaching in English. The most significant impact of the law would be on our non-native English speakers, and we currently have 21 of those employees. They are at various stages in their certification process. Three of them are on community experts, and the other 18 are all in other pathways that would clearly be covered by the amendment. In order to continue running this program, which we think is necessary to the education of our children, we need to have these non-native English speakers learn English over time, but it's pretty difficult to learn it to the level that it takes to pass this basic skills test. I know it's called a basic skills test, but I would challenge many of us in the room to pass it the first time through. And that's for a different discussion. But these are native Chinese, native Spanish speakers, and we need to have them speaking to our children in those languages. And as Senator Bono said, we have nearly 2,000 students in our two immersion programs. If not the biggest, it's one of the biggest immersion programs in the United States. And it's, I think we have two of 14 Chinese immersion programs in the country. We have a strong philosophy in Minnetonka that students who go through our schools will know the English language and all its nuances very well. We insist upon that. We're very clear with our students when they come in that they will be highly competent in English when they leave our schools. So these immersion programs are not in any way a detriment to learning the English language and the structure of our language. In fact, we do not allow students in the immersion program unless English is the home spoken language. And as you might guess, we have some heartburn from some people over that who maybe have a Russian family speaking and so forth. But we so insist that they learn English. That's a critical part of what we do. We found that on the MCA state tests that our immersion students actually outperform the students in the same grade level on an English exam in all areas. So we know that they're learning English at the same time that they're learning the targeted language. Again, I emphasize that we use the same standards for hiring these teachers, except that we expect their English level only to be at a level where they can speak well to administrators and parents and colleagues. That's the concept we have there.
Thank you, Dr. Peterson. Senator Wolf, I think you had...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bonoff, I don't oppose this. I just had a question, more of curiosity, that this would go through the 2013-2014, and Mr. Peterson, you may have alluded to this. Why out till 14 versus the 12 and 13 school year?
Senator Wolf... Madam Chair, Senator Wolf, these teachers, as Dr. Peterson said, they wouldn't be equipped between now and then to, we couldn't guarantee that they could pass because that wasn't the agreement under which they're here. They're here for a different purpose. You know, I would have been just as happy to let them be exempt for forever, but in keeping with this intention of the law and Senator Daley, we didn't do that. Gave them 2 years, but didn't make it open-ended.
Senator Steven.
Madam Chair, I had a similar question about the timing, and I think you just alluded to it, Senator Bonoff, but won't the school district, and I haven't heard from my district that this is something they're concerned about, but we have a very successful Spanish immersion program in South Washington County. Won't you run into this problem in the future, too, when you hire new teachers that then they'll have to pass the test, the exam? So what's the...
Madam Chair, Senator Steven, we will run into the problem. This was an emergency, and we just found out about it, and we're on deadline on Friday. So to be honest, we're just trying to do something that people could all agree with today. You know, I think I'd like to keep working with Senator Daley and other interested people, if I'm so lucky as to be here next year, to continue working on this issue.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Steven. Karen Ballmer, I believe,
yep.
is here. It perhaps could add any light on the subject.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I'm Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have about this bill and the topics at hand. And Senator Steven, if I might just circle back to your last question, there is a remedy that might be longer term that is in place already, and that is in statute. It's 122A25, and that's the opportunity for districts to make a request to the Board of Teaching for what's called a non-licensed community expert. And Dr. Peterson made reference that they do have a couple of teachers already moving through that route right now. The Board of Teaching has, over the last couple of years, been very supportive of viewing this as an appropriate use of that permission. And so I think we could use that as a longer-term remedy, and we could continue talking about that. The teachers in question in Minnetonka, however, were brought in through a different route. And so they're now, because they have been issued some kind of license, they cannot bounce out to that other option. So we may actually have a remedy already in place, but we'll certainly continue to talk about that.
Thank you, Ms. Baumer. Is there any further discussion? McHenry?
Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. Just want to obviously thank Senator Bonner for bringing this issue forward. This is definitely an unintended consequence of the legislation that has passed this session. I do want to lay out that this isn't the only unintended consequence that's happened as a result of this legislation. When the legislation was up the first time, the department, or myself, I should say, did raise the issue that we supported the idea of having a type of appeals process for situations like this. We were unaware of the immersion school situation, but this is something that has come up afterwards. What we have found out is that currently there are 399 teachers currently teaching in Minnesota that could be affected by the immediate effective date of the law that was passed. Further, there are 1,091 one-year temporary licenses who haven't passed their test yet but are teaching. And with the immediate effective date, that is an unintended consequence, I believe, as well. We feel that this the issue here with immersion schools is something that does need to be addressed. However, we feel this should be addressed in a comprehensive manner. I know the appeals process was something that wasn't well received. And here we're asking, we're giving a delay just for immersion schools. We think it would be more, it would be a better idea to do this in a comprehensive effort, to delay this overall for a year, to look into a matter of what this basic skills test is. As you just heard Superintendent Peterson testify to, is that the question is, what is this basic skills test? What are all the tests that these teacher candidates have to participate in before they enter a classroom? We just heard some great testimony as to some instances where these tests should that may not be the best measurement of how they are performing. We've heard from students in the classroom currently in college that are worried about how they can pass this basic skills test. So I think what we want to do is raise the issue of what is this basic skills test. If we want to make a fix specifically just for this immersion schools, we support moving forward with this, but we think it should be broader so we can address the other teachers and teacher candidates in limbo and address this in a comprehensive manner by delaying this for 1 year, working with the Board of Teaching to go through the process of what all of these tests mean and provide a comprehensive plan to institute this, the tests for teachers, for teacher candidates in the classroom. I've brought with me, if you would like further detail on any of this, our Director of Educator Licensing, Richard Wasson, and he can provide some details as to some of the calls that he's been getting from schools that are more than just the immersion schools. And we just wanted to make sure that you guys had this information in front of you.
So, you know, it's interesting that this issue has been around for 2 years, and I know the superintendent got a little bit of a scolding for me, hopefully with a wet noodle, but it was passed all the way through, went through conference committee. It was vetoed by the governor because I think he was more aligned with the Senate version than what the House had done, which our version was really aiming at trying to assure that young people pursuing teaching had those skills before they invested in the teacher preparation program. You know, it's been backed off quite a ways from that at this point. But, it went all the way through the process again this year, and I think about a month ago, the governor signed it. And I think it was even after the department had expressed similar concerns that you're expressing now. But the governor signed it. And so, any further comprehensive, it was signed, though, without an effective date that assures that it goes into effect in August. And I'm not sure that that was totally, it was something that was missed on the part of the Senate author, but apparently was something that was done in the House. And just why, I'm not sure. Now, whether there's anything that should be done on that subject, we can continue that conversation in this session. But if there's anything more comprehensive that can be done, this is kind of a stopgap measure by Senator Bonhoeff's admission that will just prevent some of the difficulties of a more immediate nature, and then a more comprehensive discussion. That's why the legislature comes back into session every year, and it will be an important year, and it should be addressed. And somebody should remember to bring it up rather than waiting until after something more has been has been created. So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Stumpf.
On the point that Mr. McHenry mentioned, does the department have any language that you could share with us to achieve the outcome that you mentioned? Does the department have any language to achieve the outcome that you mentioned?
Pardon me, Senator. Apologize.
I'm just wondering if the department has drafted any language to achieve what the department has suggested.
I don't think we've seen such a language, but Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, we don't have the language now. We wanted to raise the issue, and we're more than happy to get that language drafted.
Well, that's kind of difficult with tomorrow being the deadline for getting through policy. Timing, this is critical because we don't have too much time left. So I would hope that the department would recognize those things when coming forward with this, that best to have language in your pocket that would go with it at that time. But I do believe that this is an emergency that is worthy, given the programs, of at least being addressed to help those that are directly affected with it, and then to go on and have further discussion of it. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to be on the record that I gave my word to Senator Daley, who's not in here, that if other suggestions came forward, that for today I would not entertain them. So I believe that I have trust with my colleagues because I keep my promises. So even if Mr. McHenry had the language, I would have to, as the author of the bill, say that we can't act on that today because I have such a strong understanding with Senator Daley, who passed the law.
Well, Senator Bonhoeff, I agree with you, and I appreciate that, because I think some of these kinds of concerns were expressed even before the governor signed it, and we haven't seen any language. I mean, when there was time to deal with it, it hasn't been done. So we're giving you a hard time, Mr. McHenry, and it's not for you personally, but
And Madam Chair, Senator, I appreciate that. I understand that. As Senator Bonhoeff just said, we had this conversation forward, and she did tell us that there was this agreement, so that's why we did not go ahead and try to break that agreement. What we remain committed to do is committed to working with the author and committee members working forward as this moves forward. Obviously, this is something that can be moved in the House as well, and maybe this is something that can be solved on the way through if it passes and goes on to conference committee.
Another witness would like to, Mr. Ross. Would you like to address this issue?
Madam Chair, yes, please. Just a quick support. My name is Richard Wasson. I'm the Director of Educator Licensing, and I have no skin in this game other than to represent all the schools that are calling, like Minnetonka, who is one of my customers, as the Director of Educator Licensing. And our job is to implement everything that you pass, including what the Board of Teaching passes. And I have to say, honestly, it's just been a challenge for us with the implementation of this law in terms of the unintended consequences. So certainly I'm just here trying to represent with data and information the concerns that certainly many other schools and teachers have with the same kind of unintended consequences. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator
Bonner? I'd like to move, as amended, Senate File 2420.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Not all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. It is adopted. And I think.
And Senator Olson, will that go to the floor then? Is that
what I believe so, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
This we will be in room 15 tomorrow at 12:30. So I look forward to seeing you then. The meeting is adjourned.